Well, welcome along to Swinging 60s, and it's Ian here. We're talking on the phone to what is I can only describe as a living legend of the day from the musical world, all the way up from the 60s, from his days with the Zombies, Colin Blunstone. Hello, Colin.
Hi, Ian. Great to talk to you.
And you too, sir. And as you say, as I've just said, a living legend. There you are, all these decades later, and still churning it out, sir.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I can't believe that the Zombies first got together in 1961. And, you know, we've had some gaps along the way, but, you know, Rod Argent and myself have constantly met up again, either with him producing me or me singing in concerts for him, and obviously making records together. It's been a great relationship over 50 years, and I think it's still working as well now, as it was when we very first got together as 15-year-olds in 1961.
Incredible. I mean, there you are in the 60s. You were born in 1945, right at the end of the war. You guys all met and attended the St. Albans County Grammar School, and you set the band up, the Zombies, basically at school, didn't you?
It's that sort of thing, yes. We were all in St. Albans. We actually went to two different schools, but I went to St. Albans Grammar School, and it was just a chance thing. Certainly on my part, I didn't dare to think that we could ever be a professional band. It was many years before. We won a sort of a big rock competition, and I just started to think, well, you know, maybe there is a way ahead for the band. But up until then, I thought this was just a local thing. We used to play at local rugby clubs, and it was just a fun thing to fill in our time, you know. But it's strange the way life works out. We won this rock competition, we got a record deal with Decca, and we made a record in 1964 called She's Not There, and it was a huge hit all around the world, and of course our lives were changed forever.
Well, exactly, you exploded onto the music scene, really. Your first hit, your first single in 64, straight into the UK charts, and in those days it took a lot of sales to get into the top 20, and there you were at number 12. But you also reached you know, other heights across the world, like in America at number 2, in Canada at number 2, I think was the pinnacle, and various other chart positions around the world. That must have been a high bar for the band, the Zombies, and yourself to set for the first single. You had to follow it, if you get my drift.
Well, it is difficult, isn't it? I mean, it, in a way, it took us by surprise, but then when you're 18 or 19, you know, you think everything's possible. So it's a kind of a bit of a contradiction. It took us a bit by surprise, but as I say, as a youngster, you think everything's possible, and when it happened, you start to think, oh, well, this is fun, this is the way it's meant to be. And then, of course, as soon as we'd had a hit record, the pressure came on from Decca. You had to have a single out every 6 weeks, and Decca was saying, we need another single. And the next single was not a hit in the UK at all, and we skipped that one in the States and put out, in effect, our third single in America, which was a top 5 single in America, and it was called Tell Her No.
Yeah.
But it is tough to when you start with a big hit record. I think, of course, you should accept any success you have with gratitude. Of course you should. But if we had a choice in the matter, it might have been better if we'd had our success a little bit later, so that we'd learnt the ropes a little bit. I mean, we were a bit naive, to tell you the truth. We just turned professional. We didn't know anything about the music business, and we have this huge hit. If we'd have had that after we'd been playing gigs professionally on the road for a couple of years, it may have sat a bit more comfortably with us. But, you know, life's not like that, is it?
No, it isn't.
Success is where you can find them.
Yeah, it isn't, and I have actually. I noticed from the album that live in the UK that you've actually got going just now,
yeah.
Cracking album. I noticed that Tell Her No is actually track 8 on that, and from that album, just to quickly go to it,
yeah.
I noticed one or two tracks on it from the 60s. I think you often. You might have also suffered in 64 as you've come in there. You've had a great big hit, but then the phenomenon that was the Merseysound kind of took over a wee bit, and everybody kind of concentrated on that as opposed to anything else that was happening in the UK, which I think affected other bands, not just the Zombies, but there's a lot of bands I've spoken to who through 64, 65, 66 kind of suffered from the success of, you know, like some Merseysound.
Well, I mean, there might be an element of truth in that, but yeah. It certainly didn't affect us in other countries. I think if it did affect us, it was only in the UK. Mm. In other countries, British bands were just seen as British, and it wasn't important whether you came from Liverpool or not. And when we go to America, and we go regularly, this year we're doing 3 tours of America, and people always talk to us about what they call the British invasion, and we were one of the forerunners of the British invasion. And so, as I say, if it affected us at all, it's just in the UK, but we've got to be eternally grateful to the Beatles, because they opened the markets all around the world for British bands. Until then, it was quite hard for British bands to work abroad. But with the phenomenon of the Beatles, everyone around the world wanted to hear British bands, and yeah. We should be eternally grateful to them.
Indeed, and you're absolutely right. And what I know, you're not long just back from America and Canada. In fact, were you not on a cruise recently or something like that?
We've just spent a month in America, and we ended up. We started off in Canada, then we went to the southern states of America, and then we ended up on a cruise going to the Caribbean with the Moody Blues, and it was fantastic. It was a huge liner, 92,000-ton liner.
This album, I'll talk about this album, because you're touring just now. You're actually in Edinburgh next week in the Queen's Hall. There's no point in dwelling back in the 60s. It's you know, we look back, we can't do anything about it. We're looking forward, and here you are, still touring, and Rod Argent with you. And I noticed from that album that included in that album that you've got just now, The Zombies Live in the UK, is... And of course, She's Not There, Rod Argent actually wrote it, did he not? But you've also got the old Argent hit in there, which I think went about numbers... Did it not go to about number 5 in the UK, Hold Your Head Up? I noticed that's on the album.
Somewhere, yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about Hold Your Head Up, it was actually written by Chris White, who is the original bass player in The Zombies. So there's a real strong Zombies connection with Hold Your Head Up, in that it was written by an original Zombie. So we include that in our act. And in fact, when we play, we try and give people some idea of what we've been up to in the last 50 years. So although the backbone of the show is zombie material, we do play other songs as well, a few Argent songs, a little bit of the Alan Parsons Project, because I sang regularly with the Alan Parsons Project, and also quite a few of my solo hits as well.
That's right. I mean, your career through the decades has been great as a solo artist as well. I'm looking at a wee bit of biog I got, and it was something I've scribbled down, and I'm trying to read my own writing. Yeah. But you also released a couple of songs as under another pseudonym at one time,
Neil
didn't you?
Neil MacArthur, I think that's what you're referring to.
Neil MacArthur, that's it. I couldn't read my own writing.
Same problem. I did. When the Zombies first split in 1967, the original band ceased to exist, and... I left the music business, and I was really sad. I was devastated when the band ended, and I wasn't really sure if I wanted to come back into the business. But a producer called Mike Hurst, who had recorded a lot of the early Cat Stevens records, suggested that I started making records again, and in the evenings I would go into Olympic Studios in Barnes in London, and I would just put vocals on some tracks that Mike Hurst had recorded, and... they worked out quite well, and he suggested, and I'm not really quite sure, that we release them under a pseudonym, which was Neil MacArthur. I don't really know why, but one of these tracks was a hit, and of course then I was stuck with the name Neil MacArthur, which actually was a bit embarrassing, to be honest, to sort of in your mid-20s to have to assume... A different name. It just gets a bit confusing. But I mean, anyway, it was a laugh, really. But
when I saw it, I looked at it and I thought, in the 60s, record deals and record contracts were pretty tight, and you know, they were pretty self-contained. And I thought, when I saw the pseudonym, I thought, my instant thought was, Collins just thought of a way there to put singles out on another label and make some money without upsetting his label as such for the Zombies and Colin Blunstone.
The last deal that the Zombies did was with CBS Records, and it had ended. So I was a free agent. I could record with whoever I wanted. So it wasn't quite as complicated as that. It was, you know, it was just a feeling that my producer at the time had and I can't really explain why. And I went along with it because I wasn't sure if I was going to come back into the music business. Mm. As I said, I was just recording in the evenings and really just sort of testing the water to see if I wanted to become a full-time recording artist again, because I was still, you know, pretty upset that the Zombies had finished.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if I wanted to go through all that again. But a record was released, it was a small hit, and I was off and running. And for a year, yeah, I was Neil McArthur.
Yeah, and good on whoever pushed you into it, if you know what I mean, because if you look at the history now, if that chap hadn't pushed you into doing something else, who would have known? Because I was reading, I mean, the band split up right after what was a cracking LP in Odyssey and Oracle. And you went off to work in an insurance company about then, did you not?
Well, all three of the non-writers in the band, the two writers had a separate income stream from the writing. And so, you know, quite rightly so, they'd written some wonderful songs. They were financially quite secure, and they were determined to stay in the music business. But the other three members of the band, who weren't predominantly writers, we had no money. There had been some very strange goings on with our agent, which I won't go into too many details on, and we'd ended up with absolutely no money. And all three of us, Paul Atkinson, Hugh Grundy and myself, we had to take jobs, and we took jobs outside of the music business. So we had no choice in that, really. Funnily enough, I really enjoyed it. I worked in a really busy insurance office in the centre of London.
You were enjoying work as in the insurance company,
yeah,
in central London.
People find it hard to believe, but it took my mind off the sadness of the Zombies ending. And it was a very, very busy office, and I just had to concentrate on what I was doing. And I stayed there for about a year. And then, ironically, this last album that we left behind, Odyssey and Oracle, there was a track on that became a huge hit again in America. It was called Time of the Season.
Which is my favorite.
All around the world, and it was the biggest hit the Zombies ever had, but it was never a hit in the UK. And when that was a hit, people started phoning me to see if I was interested to come, you know, to get back into the music business. And one of them was this producer, Mike Hurst.
Mm.
And that's how I got back in the business.
Well, you just touched on my favourite Zombies track, actually, because Time of the Season is my favourite. She's Not There is cracking, don't get me wrong, but Time of the Season, for me, was my favourite. And one of my all-time favourite, by coincidence, and I'm not, honest to God, I've been saying it for ages, even before I knew I was going to speak to you, so I'm not saying it because I'm speaking to you, but one of my favourite all-time soft rock tracks, if you would like to call it that, was Argent's Hold Your Head Up.
It's a brilliant song and a brilliant track, isn't it? And I was really thrilled when we put this incarnation of the Zombies together. I was really thrilled that I'd get the opportunity to sing that song. And we do another one as well sometimes, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, which was originally an Argent song written by Russ Ballard. And they had quite a big hit with it, although I know later on it was a big hit for another band. But I get a chance to sing those two rock classics, so I was really excited about that. They're brilliant songs.
I was delighted to see Time of the Season on the new album. So, you're in the Queen's Hall in a week's time here, and the Zombies live in the UK CD still there. You can go onto the website, your website, Colin Blunstone. I'll give you all the details later, and you can also purchase this. So, next week, I mean, you're obviously going to be playing to a lot of the audience who were are probably going to be kind of long in the tooth and senior in years who remember the Zombies. But I think you're also going to be playing to quite a lot of young people who maybe are savouring the likes of the Zombies and the great music of that decade for the first time. So what do you... it's probably a loaded question because I'm asking you, but what do you think the audience can expect from the Zombies next week?
Well, first of all, I would agree with you that we very often play to a very mixed ages in when we play concerts, because people like Paul Weller and the Vaccines, and in America Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, have all cited the Zombies as influences or as favourite bands, or they love our last album Odyssey and Oracle, and so it's introduced us to a whole new generation of fans. So as you just said, we do get a mixed age group when we play, and they can expect to hear examples of things that we've done over the last 50 years. that the backbone of the act will be zombie classics and also some quite obscure tracks as well. But otherwise, we'll mix it up with tracks that we've recorded when we've been away from the zombie family, if you like. Rod obviously has had a long career as a producer and a performer in his own right, and so have I. So I'd like to think there's something there for everybody.
Absolutely. And you have, and I've got to compliment you, an absolutely unique vocal. And it's wonderful to hear, and I'm dying to hear you again now, to be quite frank.
Well, brilliant, you've made my morning.
Absolutely. And I'm personally, for me, I think it's I was just wondering about the album, and that's why I was thinking, is the album re-recordings recently? Did you re-record this recently? I noticed it was published from Red House in 2013. Did you have to re-record the album?
Well, it's a live album.
Oh, it's live, yes.
It was recorded a few months ago, and the album came about because Sony in America wanted a live album from the Zombies, specifically for the American market. We happened to have quite a few tracks recorded already, so it was, in a way, quite a simple process for us to put this album together. But Sony were only interested in the American market, so it was free for us to put it out on our own label in the UK.
Absolutely, and it's an album I recommend strongly to people to listen to. I'm going to ask you a seriously loaded question, and the answer probably I could probably think what you're going to say, but the people listening,
I'll answer the question that I want you to ask. If it's a loaded question, I'll just answer the question that I wanted you to ask me rather than the one that you do.
Go on then.
you ask me first.
Simply, have you got a favourite Zombies track you enjoy performing yourself?
Oh, I thought it was going to be much more loaded than that.
No. I don't try to be controversial. We're here to talk to a legend of the music scene, 50 years, 5 decades down the line, a guy and a band that put so much into people's lives. You know, you look back, and music is the common denominator of this world we live in, Colin. And you know, people live their lives by music. They can tell what things happened in that particular year. What it meant, maybe meeting their girlfriend, their wife, and they lived together, and it always down to being at the dance hall and hearing a certain song, all these kind of stories. So controversial I'm not.
No, it's not controversial at all. I think my favourite song is She's Not There, because it changed all of our lives, and it certainly changed my life. I had no idea that I would ever be a professional musician, and then when I became a professional musician, I had no idea that there was the opportunity to have a lifetime career in music, which is what I've been so fortunate to have. I thought in terms of, you know, I'd be lucky if I could get a 2 or 3 year career, but I've had a lifetime in music. So She's Not There changed my life, and it'll always be a firm favourite with me.
Well, you know, after all these years, you're still out there, you're still performing, even talking to you, I can hear the enthusiasm. You've still got the enthusiasm for it. And I would have thought, way back there in 1965, 66, when you were sitting scratching your head and wondering, I wondered if the thought ever entered your head, am I going to be here 50 years later doing this?
Well, it did enter my head, and I can tell you that I didn't think for a moment that I would still... You see, I think that the bands from the early 60s, in a way, they're making the rules. The Stones, the Beatles, obviously, the huge bands, or McCartney, they're making the rules. They're the first generation of rock musicians who have managed to sustain a career right the way from their teens through to the autumn of their years, you know, and in a small way, we're a part of that movement, and we're making the rules up now, and what we're doing is making a way ahead for the young musicians who are coming through now. With a little bit of luck, and, you know, some talent and some hard work, they can establish a career that will sustain them right the way through their lives. And when I came into the business, I didn't think that that was possible, but I know it is possible now. And, you know, I wish all the young musicians who come into the business now the very best of luck, and I hope they have such a wonderful career as I've had.
Indeed, and I've always said, Colin, that it was the bands, the musicians and songwriters of the 60s that shaped pop music as we know it today, really.
Well, it is true, actually, because it changed drastically in the 60s in many ways. I mean, first of all, that artists established that they could write their own songs. It sounds strange now, but songwriting and performing were two very different things in those days. But nowadays, most artists who have a long career write their own material, because good songs are like gold dust. And if you don't write your own songs, you're in trouble, really, because, you know, you need to find really good songs very regularly, and there aren't that many around.
Absolutely. And through the years, you've worked with some phenomenal people, I noticed, as well. And Denny Lane, ex-Wings, and Scotsman, I might add.
Right. Well, Denny Lane's brilliant. He's living in Las Vegas now, and we've worked with him quite a lot in America, and he's still a wonderful talent. And, of course, I recorded his old song, Say You Don't Mind. And it's funny because at one point he said to me, "You know, Colin," he said, "I didn't earn a penny from writing Say You Don't Mind." And I had the pleasure of saying to him, "Well, if it's any consolation, mate, I didn't earn a penny from singing it." And this is, these are little secrets from the music business. Yeah. The only guy who made any money out of it was the arranger, Chris Gunning. And he was saying to me, "I only made £15 for arranging the strings for Say You Don't Mind." So I could say to him, "Well, you made £15 more than Denny Lane and I made, mate, so you should be very grateful for that."
Yeah.
But anyway, that's the way the music business goes.
Well, Colin, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and I know you guys are going to rock the place next week in Edinburgh, the Queen Hall. It's a beautiful place to play. And just before I go, would you be kind enough, and I'll say my goodbyes to you just now, but would you be kind enough to introduce for me She's Not There at the end, and we'll go into playing that.
Okay, Emma, it's been great talking to you, mate. Thanks so much for having me on the show. And well, this is Colin Blunson from The Zombies, and you're just about to hear She's Not There.
Thank you, Colin. Absolutely brilliant. All the very best, and I hope there's many, many more years for you to keep strutting the stage, mate.
Thanks very much. It's been great talking to you.
All right. Thanks very much, Colin. All the best.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.